For KBIA News, I'm Christopher Husted. The unrest that followed the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson last year raised conversations about race in communities all over the United States. But what was the reality on the ground before the incident that led to the large, sustained protests seen afterward? And are those same conditions present elsewhere? KBIA's Bram Sablesmith has the story of how segregation compares across 22 Missouri cities and what it tells us about our local community.
When Mary Ratliff moved to Columbia from Mississippi in 1959, she was leaving one of the epicenters of American segregation and the burgeoning civil rights movement. But that doesn't mean she escaped experiences of racism and segregation in her new home.
It was subtle here. When I first came, I've made a comment many times, and everybody laugh at me. And I just say that Columbia's big little Dixie, you know, it wasn't a whole lot different.
And Ratliff says those subtle racial divides in the community have persisted. Actually, since she became president of the Missouri NAACP in 1991, it's been part of her job to draw attention to them, a message she says is not always well received.
Somebody said one time, you know, if Mary Ratliff would just leave Columbia, everything would be okay, you know?
But Ratliff, who is also president of the Columbia NAACP, says all you really need to do to see what segregation looks like in the city today is take a walk down Broadway.
Where are we now?
We're on Broadway in front of the City County Building.
And what do you see?
Well, we have very few African Americans down on Broadway. We have very few African Americans, if any, that work on Broadway. And so this is just typical of what you see in Columbia.
Now, there are a number of variables that can affect what we see on Broadway at any given time. Ratliff is observing the street on the Tuesday before Christmas. The students are mostly gone. Some families are already gathering for the holidays. In 1 month, the street could look wildly different from how it looks today. And that makes statements about broader trends like segregation difficult to make using observation alone. And that's a problem MU journalism professor David Herzog faced as he sought to engage his students around the events unfolding in Ferguson.
A bunch of us at the university wanted to get together and brainstorm on some ideas for doing some reporting that would be helpful in illuminating what was going on there and in other cities around Missouri.
So with his reporting class, Herzog calculated measures of disparity, including segregation, in the 22 Missouri cities with at least 10,000 people and an African-American population of at least 10%. Columbia was one of them, and so was Ferguson. For the most part, Columbia's indicators are middle of the pack. But by one measure in particular, Columbia's segregation is higher than most cities in Missouri, including Ferguson. Dissimilarity is one of the more widely used measures of segregation. In this particular case, it measures how evenly or not African American households are distributed across Columbia as a whole. Of the 22 cities measured, Columbia's dissimilarity is the seventh highest, meaning the seventh most segregated. And of the 25 census tracts that make up the city, the dissimilarity of one tract stands apart. Census Tract 21 is one of Columbia's smallest by land area, but is home to nearly 10% of the city's black population. And it's located just north of the downtown business district, so just north of Broadway. Broadway has also served as a staging area for protests, like this one, which began in front of City Hall on December 12th. The protest, which was organized by a group of students called MU for Mike Brown, was one of several held across the United States that week in response to grand jury decisions exonerating officers in the deaths of Michael Brown in Ferguson and Eric Garner in New York. 21-year-old Justin Cutts was one of the group's organizers. He says data and measures like the ones Herzog's class compiled don't tell the full story about segregation and the black experience.
You have those people who are interested in seeing what are the facts, what are the data. I prefer to just take people to where I live, where I stay, take them around my family, get them to ask other black people that they might know, other minorities that they might know, anybody that might be in the situation of poverty, and see how they have grown up and what experiences they've gone through.
And sometimes data can't tell that full story. For instance, one index Herzog's class calculated is called interaction. It measures the likelihood that African Americans and whites will interact based on the extent to which the two groups share a residential area. Columbia rates pretty well in the Interaction Index, the sixth best of the 22 cities in Herzog's data set. But the potential for interaction between two groups says nothing about the quality of interaction between those groups. And to Cutts, that's an important distinction. Being the only black person in a room, he says, carries with it an obligation.
You have to set the example, and it sucks, and a lot of people don't want to step up to that role, but we unfortunately have a tag that has been placed on us since birth. We represent a culture, we represent ourselves, we represent our families everywhere we go, and we're the only black person in the room. You know that whatever you do, somebody's going to form a judgment about every other black person.
And even some experts agree there are aspects of race relations that can't be summed up in segregation numbers. John Iseland is head of the Department of Sociology at Penn State University and former chief of the Health and Poverty Statistics Branch of the U.S. Census Bureau.
They don't tell us about, you know, friendship networks and things like that, for example. So they just kind of tell us where people live.
But Iseland says even just knowing where people live can tell us a lot about their life chances.
The types of neighborhoods that people live in are of unequal quality just in terms of their amenities, quality of the schooling, and so on.
Take Columbia's Census Tract 21. That's the tract with 10% of the city's black population. It sits in the attendance area for Benton Elementary, one of the poorest-rated schools in the city. 51% of its students are black, and in 2014, 23% of fifth graders scored below basic in mathematics. Now, compare that with Census Tract 12.01, which has one of the lowest percentage of black residents and is home to only 2% of the city's black population. It's in the attendance area for Fairview Elementary, where just 12% of students are black and only 8% of fifth graders scored below basic in mathematics. In fact, a larger percentage of fifth graders at Fairview scored advanced in mathematics than the fifth graders at Benton who scored just proficient or above combined. In this case, the data suggests the geography of educational opportunity overlaps with the geography of segregation. There's a question to be asked there. And David Herzog says raising questions is the point.
I'm hoping that, you know, this, you know, again, gives people the ability to, you know, measure up their own town and be able to compare it to other cities and to maybe use it kind of as a thermometer to say, okay, you know, how hot are the problems in our town?
The data is a tool against which to measure our conceptions about race in Columbia versus the reality. And when the two don't match up, Mary Ratliff says that's the beginning of the conversation.
It's uncomfortable for all of us, but we have to be willing to sit at the table, lay it all out on the table, and to discuss it, okay? Folks have to admit that it is a reality, and then we can start working on solutions.
For KBIA News, I'm Bram Sablesmith.
And for KBIA News, I'm Christopher Husted.